Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes, totally. Go away.
This is Karina Evans, and if you love TV and movies, tune in and subscribe to Watch Less Podcast with Cal and Fraser.
What up, guys? Welcome back to Watch Less. I'm your host, Summerman, co-host to my virtual right, Deputy Cal. What's going on, Cal?
It's weird. We're still home.
It's been a very long, long period of Zooming, but we're here. And we are not stopping with the guests today. You have a very special young lady by the name of Karina Evans, who you know from directing, I think, the entirety of Drake's videos for Scorpion. But she could have gone on to just be a very dope music video director.
And that would have been a very lucrative career.
Lucrative, and she came out of the gate swinging. Like, she would have been certified in that arena. But the true greats are never content to be locked into one box. And Karina has actually stepped into the world of narrative filmmaking by directing a pilot for Starz's upcoming new drama series, P-Valley. For those who don't know, directing a pilot is like a prestigious job because you are pretty much setting the tone for how a new show is going to look. Like, there's no telling if, you know, Karina could come back. You know, she's obviously a very busy woman, but regardless, what she does here will set the template for how the show looks going forward.
Facts. And I mean, and for someone like her who's been accomplished and had such an eye just with, you know, the music video stuff she's done so far, it's almost like a very high bar you're setting with the show of having someone like Karina on it. For a series like P-Valley, I don't think you could have anyone but Karina. You know, if you really want to take it there and really try and challenge a viewer with a different story, a different way of looking at a story, I think you might as well come out the gates with Karina doing the damn thing.
And a show like P-Valley is definitely something that, you know, warrants a really, really steady hand guiding it, because it's definitely a show that could, with the wrong person at the helm, just slip into exploitation, because it is set inside a strip club and follows several of the dancers around and in their lives. So you want someone who knows the female gaze.
Facts.
For sure.
Well, and she gets into that a little bit, talking about a conversation she had going into the creation, or at least the ideation of the pilot, and giving the show a set of visual rules, if you will, to, you know, for future directors and visual people for the show to follow in subsequent episodes, which again, having someone like Karina at the helm for the first episode is it's a big statement. And for a show like P-Valley, I think you need that care and attention, like you were saying earlier, to take care of some of these certain topics.
And, you know, she also goes into her unprecedented rise, you know, which is, I think, something people who want to follow her footsteps could definitely use. She gets really into how unorthodox way she came up and how quickly she rose and her influences.
Yeah. She's got one main influence.
A lot of big influence talk.
A lot
and of her method. Her methods were interesting too. You know, we caught her while she was prepping some other top secret projects. Karina Evans is definitely quickly becoming one of the most interesting filmmakers to watch. You know, we already know her resume, but again, getting her for something like this, it's more about, she's a name that sparks curiosity about what she's going to do with a project and what she's going to do next. So it's like, you hear Karina Evans directing TV.
Yo.
Is there a feature around the corner?
And yo.
She was positively cagey about it, you know?
It was awesome because when we were getting ready for this and I realized that she's directing an episode of Snowfall, this upcoming season of Snowfall, I actually was working on it right around the time the quarantine hit. So there's a little bit of a the future of remote, you know, filmmaking in there, if you will. But once I heard she was attached again to this gritty FX show about LA and the crack epidemic in the 80s, I'm like, yeah, I'm on board. I don't know what the episode's about, but if Karina's there, give me that shit right now. I'll take the screeners out of context. Don't care. Feed it right to me right now.
And, you know, it can be understated. Like, we don't get into this too much because we're more about discussing what she's doing now and next.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it can be said without shade, just objectively, that Drake doesn't always have the best music videos. And when she came on, I think everything she did together and individually amounts to some of the best visual work he's ever put out.
Word. At the very least, even if the video was just like, we're all going to get together and dance, there were certain narrative elements that were in there to give the story, to give the video more of a feel than just here's a quick premise so we can get to the, you know, to see this one particular shot.
It's almost like, I'm glad she's moving on and doing even bigger and better things, but it's also like, if he has time to call you for the new one,
yeah,
can you get over there?
Even if it's one, even if it's on this set, even if he has to be the weird quirk, because there's a quirky Drake that's coming out in some of these music videos where he's kind of like fourth walling and, you know, giving a wink to the audience about being in on the joke. And it would be funny if, like, he filmed a video on the set of Snowfall. This is probably the last thing Karina Evans ever wants to hear. You know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't want Drake to be attached to her like that. But, you know, it is funny to think of, just again, just because of their relationship and how attached they were for the visuals for Scorpion. But, yeah, we don't get so much into her past. It is really about what she's got going on in the future. And, you know, just based off of the way she's prepping and the way she's talking about it, it sounds like it's going to be something. At the very least, your eyes are going to perk up. You're going to be paying attention for whatever Karina's got down the pike. That's about it for now. I want to get to this interview. So, shit, you guys stick around. We'll hit you with that interview after this quick break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Watch Less, as always. I really love the collection of guests we're getting on the show. I know we do a lot of, it's been a number of actors. We've had a couple of writers. Shouts out to the homie Corey Jefferson. I really want to get more directors on the show. I thought it was cool that we had someone like Pamela Adlon on the show. But today we have the lovely Karina Evans on the show. She directed the first episode of P-Valley, new series coming out on Stars. I mean, you've seen a lot of her work out there behind the camera. You've seen her in front of the camera as well. We'll talk about all of that today. Karina, thank you for joining. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you for having me. How are you guys?
It's
maintaining.
Yeah, I mean, summer's coming in, so, you know, I don't want to give weather talk, but it's getting kind of toasty out there. But the hell can you do? It is that time of year. We're not out of it yet, but we're coming toward, it feels like, a certain point in the quarantine situation. How have you been handling the last couple months of your life?
I mean, we are in a revolution and a pandemic, and that is very heavy and can weigh on you, as you all know and feel. But there's a lot of positive creativity and change happening simultaneously. So today I feel quite inspired. And so how have I been? Inconsistent, all over the place.
Okay. Is that, right. How's that been affecting your work? Have you been getting a lot done, or is it kind of just some days are different than others?
I think every day is different. Some days it propels me to work and write and create because I have something to say about what's going on or about what I'm feeling. And other days I, you know, just have to kind of accept that it might be a write-off if I'm feeling quite emotional about it.
Yeah. I ask because I noticed there's one of the credits that intrigued me the most that I didn't realize until fairly recent you were going to be a part of was season 4 of Snowfall. I saw your peg for us episode 2. Is that something that's been in the can, or were? Cause I saw that they were pushed back because of, you know, COVID-19 and things. Did that affect your episode at all?
Luckily, I shot my episode right before quarantine and finished the last day of my edit remotely. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I was able to go through the process and deliver without being affected by the pandemic.
Shouts out to the loyal listeners who've been rocking with us. We've been working remotely throughout the quarantine, but I've not talked to anybody who directed anything remotely. What was that? Did they have a Zoom for you behind the camera? Like, how did that work?
No. I mean, I finished the last day of edit of post remotely.
Oh, okay. So that's not too bad then. Okay.
That's not too bad. I mean, they do have the technology right now to facilitate working remotely, but I would likely go crazy.
How much time was that roughly? Was it just a couple days or?
No, we shot for 8 days and you prep for 8 days. But because it was my first time doing an episode, so it was my first time episodic directing, and obviously P-Valley was my first time in television period, I asked for more time. So I came in early and I wanted to just immerse myself in the environment early and sort of figure out how the train moves and how I can jump on it without rocking it too much.
Were you familiar with the show before it started?
Yeah, I was a huge fan, so I was happy to be a part of it and loved the characters, loved the storyline. Was a fan from the first season. And so, you know, working with the producers and working with the actors, it was a dream, to be honest. I loved every part of the experience.
How did it feel to be on the other side?
Of what do you mean?
Of, you know, being a fan of the show to then go being a part of the creative team.
To working on it.
I mean, in the moment, it sort of wasn't a surreal feeling because I'm just very much focused on the job at hand. And then you finish the job and you're like, well, shit, what did I just do? And it kind of hits you afterwards. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes, totally. Go all the way in.
I'm glad you mentioned, though, that the distinction between directing episodically versus directing a pilot, because that's what really interested me about taking on P-Valley for you was that when you direct a pilot, you're pretty much establishing the language of what that show will be. Yeah. So how did you take that on and how did you come to those decisions about really building what the show's going to be from wherever it goes from now?
Mm-hmm. It's through a lot of conversation with the showrunner. I guess to take it back a little bit, when I first read P-Valley, I felt a whole visceral reaction throughout my body where I felt empowered and felt liberated through Pittori's writing, the showrunner and creator and writer, and hadn't seen this particular group of women represented in the way that she wrote them. And so I just felt like I had to be a part of it and you know, pitched on it. And in my very, very first conversation with Pittori, she had said, the visual style for P-Valley is what she coined Delta Noir, which is basically adapting traditional noir principles, but putting a twerk on it, is what she said. Is literally what she said in our first conversation. And so I somehow knew what that meant. And we spoke a lot, and I really just wanted to get into her mind and into her head to see what she saw and to envision what she envisioned. And so the process of understanding this style was very different than, you know, what I had done prior to that moment. But it was through a real collaboration. And from there, I started to build out a lookbook that was could serve as a visual Bible of you know, references and rules to be broken or followed through conversation with her.
Were you cool with, like, did you know her before? Did you have a relationship, or were you familiar with her work prior to working
on this? Of course, familiar with her work, and I mean, she's a god.
Yeah.
Hadn't met her prior to reading the pilot, and she's by God, I mean, she's a visionary, you know. And so, in one single conversation with her, I had already grown and learned from her, and so. It was just a partnership I was really interested in.
Right. Well, you mentioned this was the first time you worked in TV. Were you actively looking for projects? Did you were trying to get some TV swag going?
Yeah. I started in music videos and love the art of music videos, but the end goal for me was always film and TV. And before I could really even articulate that I wanted to be a storyteller, I felt that love and itch and desire for stories, and I was particularly interested in narrative and long form, but, you know, didn't have any clue how to do it, so I wanted to practice quite literally through music videos, because I'm impulsive, and I also wanted to practice on a very short amount of time, literally on screen, if that makes sense.
That's pretty dope, because I mean, you know, you're just hearing you talk about it, you don't hear too many people who are able to kind of chart their own path like that. Like, and I know you in the past you have a working relationship with Director X, things like that. You know, I hear people get, you know, interning and getting putting on things like that, but there's usually a pattern, you know what I mean? It's like you do a certain thing and then you get to this part. I mean, I guess, is it fair to say that you're definitely a lot more pointed in the decisions you're making for your career?
I try to be, and I like to be, and I'd like to think that I am. You know, before reading P-Valley, I was very much in search of stories that could subvert how women were specifically represented before that moment. That could be in music videos or just on the screen in the general sense. And so in sort of looking for that and asking for that, when P-Valley came across my desk, I felt like it was meant to be.
And, you know, Cal mentioned X, but did you have any other, I guess, influences, especially in the path that charts from music video to narrative? Because we were just talking about, you know, Joel Schumacher just passed, and some of his early films, I remember critics describing them as, like, music video-esque in a really positive way, like if you look at Lost Boys or Flatliners like that.
Yeah, my biggest influence is no doubt Melina Matsoukas.
Legend.
Yeah, there's no words to describe her. I was very, since I was young, inspired by Melina, because not only did I heavily connect to her work, but when I understood who was behind that work, I saw myself and then realized that through that, I also had a voice and could tap into that voice. So I'm very, very inspired by her work and by her path and her creativity and her vision. Her storytelling is just, it's really brilliant. And I think that you can see that influence in my work if I'm honest. but I'm also, you know, inspired by my peers as much as I am, like, inspired by the people before me. You know, I think there are so many incredible young filmmakers right now, photographers, directors, cinematographers. There's no way that you can't be inspired and grow in this time.
Now, if we're talking the Melina path, though, when are we going to see the directed by Karina Evans feature film?
Facts.
Soon. I cannot tell you exactly when, but she's working on it, folks.
I hope that some of that consistent work you had going on in the last couple of months was towards whatever the film will end up being. That's my hope anyway.
From your lips to God's ears.
Now you've also been doing a lot of acting, though. I mean, you know, there was some talk around Firecrackers last year. You know, I think it's funny to see that you've had directing, but you also start to look as like the acting roles are also increasing as well. What is it about, you know, a particular role that has to grab you and say, I want to, you know, take this person on in front of the camera?
I mean, strangely enough, I think because I started acting and directing at the same time and started my quest to understand both of those crafts at the same time, I think what I look for on both sides is quite similar, in that I'm looking for stories that I can truly offer my perspective. And if I don't have a perspective, I don't feel like I have any business being in that space of telling the story. But specifically, I'm drawn to stories that, you know, challenge issues of ethical issues of our time, or, you know, stories that subvert a previously misconceived notion of a particular group of people or of women or of Black women or of strippers. I'm interested in stories where I can see myself on screen. I can see people who look like me. I can see characters that haven't been presented before. I would say I'm most drawn to, and my goal is representing underrepresented communities.
And we've talked to people too that said that, you know, we've talked to actors, directors like Jay Ellis, who directed for the first time on this recent season of Insecure. And he was saying that having that proficiency in both really elevates your craft and each separate aspect.
Yeah, 100%. I think that I understood what my, or found rather, my process in directing through acting, how to speak to actors by living in the actor headspace, how to not speak to actors because I didn't particularly like being spoken to in certain ways, so I avoid that. But I think just the biggest benefit is understanding story on a deeper level and being able to have respect for both the director role or the actor role by reason of being in both of those spaces. It's allowed for me to understand the best way to collaborate. Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to P-Valley for a second and just ask you, like, how important was it to you and Katori, I guess, that this show start with a woman behind the lens? Like, I don't know if the plan is for women to direct the entire season, but at least to set the table.
It was very, very important to Katori. I think, again, it's one of those things that happened in our very first conversation where we aligned not only on the story and the potential for how beautiful the story is, but we particularly aligned on the female gaze and that this story need to be told through that lens. And even in sort of innately understanding that, we had to figure out the words to articulate that to the rest of the crew. Because I think, you know, one's female gaze or my female gaze might be different than her female gaze. And sort of what we continue to zero in on was just being able to root the camera and the story in her experience. And all elements drive back to that. And that's, you know, avoiding objectifying, that's avoiding hypersexualizing, that's avoiding presenting these women in gratuitous, false fashion. Mm.
Yeah, I definitely got that sense from, you know, a lot of the dance scenes, even from movies and TV that have definitely been in the setting before. These felt like much more, I guess, realer or grittier and true to life to what that setting really is.
That's Katori. Like, she is the mastermind behind P-Valley, and through every conversation was so passionate about the authenticity of everything that needed to be communicated, and that was down to the costume, the clothes, the dialect, you know, everything that you see, she enforced. There'd be authenticity in that.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about the last scene, too, the last dance scene, that is, with Mercedes, when the audio cuts out and you just hear her breathing. I think that really, really puts you in her perspective. And also, I don't know if that this was the intent, but made me like really nervous. Or
well, I mean, I myself will never be able to do that. I don't know about any of y'all on the call, but I think that's a really good example of the way that P-Valley subverts the narrative of stripping or pole dancing or however you feel most comfortable describing what these women do. It's high art. It's a physical, demanding sport. support. Shout out to the editor, Hymina. That moment was to basically get audiences inside her head and to feel what it would feel like to climb up to the top of the pole, you know, somehow get yourself upside down and drop head first to the floor. Yeah. And the power that you and she has in that moment over everyone in that room.
Yeah, no, it's insane. It's where does that rank in terms of like some of the favorite moments or scenes you got to shoot for the P-Valley pilot?
That one was special because Brandy, who plays Mercedes, had been training for weeks and weeks. Mm-hmm. And she has a background in dance, but had never done pole dancing before. And so to see her journey and her progression to be able to climb up on that pole. And while we did have body doubles for the, you know, bigger moves, like dropping head first to the ground, but she put in so much work to be able to carry most of that routine, which is so helpful as a director in the edit and for the producers to be able to blend and hide the use of a body double. But so it was really, really special because I was so proud of Brandy and because she was like fully Mercedes in that moment. And it was special to see her pour her heart into that.
And are we going to see more Karina doing, you know, episodes of television? Some of her, what are some of your, are there any TV shows in particular that you rock with and you think you could add a dope spin on?
Snowfalls.
Because I feel like people would say Insecure, but I don't want to say Insecure because I feel like that's a little too on the nose. And trust me, the Karina Evans, whatever season finale of Insecure, Karina Evans directs will be fire. But okay. I want to, you know, like really get a little outside the box.
I would love to direct Insecure. Are you kidding?
Of course. Of course.
Are you kidding? It is so rightfully on the nose. But also, like, I think with that, I've not been in a half hour comedic narrative space. And so that would be really interesting for me to get into and understand that language and how that differs and just to be able to expand what's in my toolbox. So, I mean, I love Insecure for its characters and its story, but I think also just a chance to learn would be amazing in that space.
And the flex, I mean, they do pull off some beautiful shots of LA in that as well. So I think you could really given that HBO bag, some of those shots. I don't know. Emmy's where y'all at now. What else do you watch?
I'm sorry.
Like what else do you watch on the regular TV-wise, I should say?
I right now am immersing myself more in film.
Okay.
Because I'm focused on the couple of films that I'm developing. I'm studying and watching more film than television.
Ooh, all right. So you cannot talk about the project. Can you? You won't share, let us know what you're studying. You know, we can't get what's in Karina's queue this week. We're not going to get that at all.
The queue curriculum.
Damn, I'm trying, y'all. I'm trying, but I mean, what's your process like? I mean, let's say you're studying a film, are you keeping that on a schedule? Are you taking days where you've got like, okay? So I'm assuming you're taking in a body of films. Are you knocking out like six back to back just to get whatever the headspace is, or?
I wish I had that time too. You know what? I'm going to do that, you know, maybe next weekend. I'll give myself 6 hours and knock it off back to back. But it depends on the space that I'm in. You know, I like to watch films that I, you know, fell in love with when I was a kid too. Understand what it is that I really connected about it and if I would receive that story in a different way being where I am now. I like to watch my favorite director's films. I like to watch new foreign films that I have been recommended or haven't seen. I like to watch films that are very closely connected to the two films that I'm developing because there's just so much that I don't know and I don't know what I don't know. And so I'm just trying to intake as much information as I can. And, you know, the sort of positive side of the quarantine was that I had moments to do that.
I guess, I mean, that would make sense. I mean, I hear what you're saying, because, I mean, you're also kind of is unconventional the best way? Like, your path to where you are now wasn't what, you know, kids who graduated high school think it would normally be. You know, so I can understand the idea of, okay, well, let me you can't be about what you're doing without understanding what's come before. So, yeah. That period of boning up makes sense. Totally. I had to do that. Matter of fact, I had to do that with Snowfall to catch up. I was so behind.
And I still have to do that.
Don't tell me. I mean, I don't know if you can convince this man, Karina, to take some hours out of his day.
Come on.
It's in the queue. It's just a lot.
We're not talking about a show that is just like, oh, it's got good action. Oh, you know, there's one guy. It's like the whole, the story is great. The way it's shot, the music selection is great. Like, I think when you think of what FX does and then think about what a show that would explore the cocaine and crack epidemic and the effects in cities like Los Angeles, this is what you get. You know, it is Snowfall to a T.
Yeah. And I mean, can you name any other shows that have a black male lead?
Exactly.
An hour long show.
Cannot.
Exactly.
So kind of crazy that we're still saying that. Yeah.
You got to do it as a TV critic, and you have to do it for the culture.
I know. One thing you did say, though, did make me wonder. You were talking about films, going back to films you liked as a kid. What were some of the movies that you would say are kind of like, you know, formative for pushing you to this field?
I think Love and Basketball is strangely, not strangely, rightfully so, a really big influence on me because of both the director and the lead actress. It was the first time that I saw, like, you know, even before understanding who Melina was, it was the first time I saw a director who was black, who was a female, who had written and directed it. And I love every aspect of it. I'm a sucker for a love story. And then also you had a black female lead. So it inspired me so much. That's a big influence on my early days. I loved Before Sunrise. So much because it changed the way that I thought about dialogue in film, and loved it so much that I didn't watch the following two films because I didn't want to fall out of love.
Wow, that's amazing.
I was worried.
I mean, I haven't seen the following two, but I heard good things.
People
tend to like it as a trilogy, I think.
See, I've not taken the dive, and I think because I'm a completist. I don't know if I could start watching and not finish the other two. So I applaud your drive on that one. Jeez.
I love it so much that I want to avoid anything tainting that love. Mm-hmm. And I heard it's amazing. I heard both of them are amazing. I can't bring myself to do it yet.
I respect it.
Let someone else enjoy it.
Yeah.
Are there, you talked earlier about you know, how some of you watching a lot of your favorite directors. Who could you name some of your favorite directors? Who do you think you know, who really does it for you? You mentioned Melina, but who else outside of Melina would you say would be some of your favorites?
Melina. Melina. No, I'm joking. I really am inspired by Spike Jonze and Barry Jenkins. Those are kings to me. But most recently I'm so inspired by the director of Last Black Man in San Francisco, Joe Talbot. Yeah. I think I could be mispronouncing his name, but for him to come straight out of the gates with mastery, I was floored. Find myself rewatching the film. For inspiration and to reference and just for healing and to feel the beauty of black face is represented in that way. It's just, it's so perfect. I love that film so much.
We're hoping we get a Karina Evans project like that as well. Because something tells me.
I hope too. Shoot.
Are you the type of filmmaker who's, I mean, you talk about, you know, like, you know, putting young emerging voices on. Are there actors or actresses that you're like, yeah, I really want to work with them? Or are you kind of more focused on more raw and authentic stories and talent, you know, and filling those roles with, you know, people on that level as opposed to someone who, you know, you might have a great kinship with, but is, you know, already seen and people already know what to expect when they come, you know, to the craft?
I am a fan of both. I like to work with people who I find are smarter than I am so that I can absorb all of that and grow from that. There are a lot of actors and producers that I would love to work with and, you know, hopefully can find. But I'm also interested in working with new talent and new voices and, you know, being a part of that next generation of voices and, you know, coming up together. I have an amazing, amazing group of girlfriends who are all actors, and my dream would be to direct a film that they star in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of like how we were talking about how directing a pilot is setting the tone for a show, like directing a feature or something that was like a big first showcase for someone is a crazy way to like put your stamp on it too.
From our lips to God's ears, like you said.
Exactly. Earlier. I was about to say that.
For people that are trying to get put on, especially, you know, the voices of people of color who don't feel like they're being heard, what do you have any advice for how they can, you know, start to get on the path to doing what you do and aspiring to, you know, be able to put on the work that you put on in your career?
A couple things. I think the first thought that I have is to really, really believe in yourself. And that sounds like, you know, a very cheesy sort of saying, but there will be a lot of people who will root against you and who might not want you to be in the position that you are not in, and you cannot let those people get in the way of your telling of the story. Just believe in yourself and focus on the story, and don't let those voices seep in. Which is a very challenging thing to do from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that to everyone else as much as I'm still saying it to myself.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is to never stop learning and growing. To never stop learning and growing. And like, you know, personally in your craft.
And also just as a person in general. I mean, I think that's definitely something we should all strive for. Is you know, stay learning, stay plugging away. Karina, thank you very much for joining the Watch Less Pod Less. It was a podcast. It was a great pleasure to have you on.
Thank you guys.
Hopefully, whenever your movie situation is in, when it comes to fruition, we should have you back.
When it's less top secret.
And
hopefully we can do it IRL, because while I love being able to connect with everyone through a computer, we need some safe human interaction.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears.
That might need to be the title of the
episode.
That's
the name of this episode.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you, Karina.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you.
Dan, once again, shouts out to Karina Evans. Fun talking to her. She's definitely, you know, we say it a lot, but I think she's one who, I guess, whenever this project comes, we're going to have a sit down with her to really just like get into the nuts and bolts, or even as much as she'll graciously give us about, you know, whatever the gestation and the manufacturing of this project that she has on the way. P-Valley is on Stars this Sunday. It premieres her episode again. Tarina Evans directed the pilot episode, so you're going to check that out Sunday night, only on Stars. Run that up, because, if again, it's an interesting story. It's a story you don't really see on television a lot, especially getting into the nuts and bolts of it's the strip club world. It's hard to for a lot of people to tell that story without getting too exploitative. So, you know, if you like what they're doing, you know, run up those numbers. Before we get out of here, there were a couple of sad passings in the world of film and television that we wanted to hit on before we wrap things up. It's always sad when people pass.
I mean, we lost two legit, like, you know, GOAT and legend and icon thrown around. But when you talk about these guys, whose work literally goes back
decades,
multiple decades.
Yeah.
Carl Reiner, actor, comedy legend.
Yeah.
And film composer Ennio Morricone.
I woke up to that Ennio news, man. It's I was actually listening to a lot of his stuff, not just because of rewatching The Hateful Eight, but one of his themes from The Thing was used in the first season, The Homecoming. Because Sam only used in that first season. I don't know about season two, but in season one, all of the music was sourced from old film and TV scores, and it was
into some Bernard Herrmann Homecoming.
Yeah, if you really sit and do the knowledge on what they pulled from for that show, it's a very interesting, and all of the themes fit. And I think that's one of the things with Ennio. It's like it's kind of just like you knew instantly, like, damn, this something about those scores, man. It was he didn't invent the wheel, but he damn sure perfected it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to call him literally objectively the GOAT of composing, that's not wild.
Word.
But I mean, you know, also with him and Carl, they were, you know, not to be insensitive, but In a year of a lot of tragic, untimely passings, they were both pretty up there.
So, yeah, yeah. You know. I mean, when you're at a certain age, I mean, you're hoping you're not hearing that, you know, someone's being taken because of the coronavirus.
That too. Yeah, I think both were natural causes.
Yeah, it's as good as
it can be.
Yeah, I think when you're getting into like your late 80s and early 90s, you know, you're just hoping you're comfortable and able to just chill. Right. So yeah, you know, rest in peace to the both of them. Again, thank you for what you've contributed to the landscape of pop culture. I just thought about one thing I wanted to tease you on. Now that Tenet has been pushed to the middle of August, are you all right, Fraser? Are you okay?
I'm not feeling great.
I know this feels like it's the third time this film's date's been pushed back.
I mean, I'm comfortable with whatever happens. I don't want to go to the movies if it's not safe to go to the movies.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with whatever happens as long as we see that in a theater.
Are you?
And I'm comfortable knowing that Christopher Nolan will never buckle and release this on VOD. And honestly, it's kind of the more pushbacks happen, the more theaters are like in real trouble, which is kind of scary.
It's worse than I thought it was going to be when people were first asking us about it in like the late March, early April.
Yeah,
I thought the bounce back was going to be a little better, but I mean, I can't help it. I've been I'll say it at the end of this podcast too. You guys got to be abiding by these damn rules. People want to be outside the house. Everybody gets sick again, and then you keep fucking up the entertainment because now I have to wait. Now, because I was going to ask you, let's say they say fuck it. End of August, we're putting Tenet out, VOD, theaters aren't open, whatever. But you get that plug email that says, yo, special screening.
Oh.
Not even at like an empty AMC, but at like a regular, like, you know, 30-seat screening room. You going?
I'm in there.
The dedication.
It's bigger than my TV at home, I gotta fuck with it.
Are you gonna be the boy in the bubble? Or are you gonna have like a hazmat suit? Or are you just rolling in, you know, one mask?
No, it's more just like, I remember me and my friends laughed at this one time. We went to the movies with us, like the usual squad, and then like one or two like acquaintance niggas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this one dude, he just rolls into the theater, like one of the dudes who's like, you know, just a guy we knew around school and stuff. And he just plops in a row by himself. He's like, I don't need to sit with you niggas. Which is like, all right, we came here together. 100%. That's usually how this works. Fast forward like 10 or 15 years, he might be ahead of his time. So you know, any theater situation, I'm just like, I'm like me mugging anyone who tries to get even close to me. Like, yeah. And I don't think anybody would.
I'm trying to think of the times when you and I have gone to screenings. Surprisingly, we've not gone to as many screenings as you might think we have together. But there's been a couple times where we've had a seat in the middle. But it's usually...
Yeah, I feel like that's a normal guy thing.
Yeah.
If guys have the option, they'll leave that one seat in between.
You treat movie stall movie theater seating like you do urinal stalls in the bathroom.
In this case, I think whenever theaters open, whenever the first time I go to see something, which will likely be Tenet, because really that's the movie the theaters need.
Yes.
To really get people back in there. But yeah. Whenever that is, I think everyone should operate under the assumption that I'm saving seats for like five friends.
I bought this whole row out. Don't worry about it. You know.
Yeah, is that the wave? Do you just have to buy the row out?
You might regardless? Need to. I mean, again, I think, and we'll get out of here in a second. But I think just listening to what AMC was doing, it sounds like if there's 250 seats in that theater, they're supposed to be only selling seats for 125 people, and I guess that's also supposed to include, you know, the idea that there are seats in between.
Well, you know what I just thought of too, for at least traditional movie theaters, obviously the ones that are kind of dine-in recliners are different and they have way more space, but a normal movie theater, at least the back row just became like premium.
Yes. Yeah. I used to only
anywhere else you have people over you too.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll, I don't know. I, because I'm in the middle, if I was in New York, I think it'd be a different situation. Because I'm in the middle of Jersey, I have no plans of going anywhere, even work. Like, until I know it's transit is safe, and because I got to go. If I don't catch an Uber to the train station, I got to catch a bus to get on a train, to get on a subway train, to then go to whatever spot with a screen is going to be showing a movie. I could die by the time I get back home. Like I'm not. I don't know if it's worth it yet. Spike said November, December. Maybe I think I'm thinking February.
I mean, we might have to do a full episode on this, but I think to wrap it up, I just hope whether it's the government or maybe like, you know, the big money guys like Spielberg and George Lucas, like. Mm-hmm. They need. It sounds like the theater chain is going to need some real, real help.
Yeah, they might need to establish. Actually, let me save my idea for people that have money and want to pay me for it. Once again, thanks again, Karina Evans, for hopping on the pod. I don't want to waste any ideas. And I know how some people are. You know,
I've been there.
They listen in the pods. They sniping. But no, Karina Evans, once again, director of P-Valley. That episode that debuts this Sunday on Stars. We're dropping this pod still. Corona, no corona, whatever. As long as we're here, we're dropping. Every Wednesday, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, you can tune in to Watch Less. Wherever you get your podcast from, if you could subscribe, drop us a review, a rating, share with your friends, boost the signal, let people know what we're doing so we can continue to do it. Get at us on at Complex Pop on Twitter and Instagram. Get in the conversation, but don't be silly about it. I did see, I forget homegirl's name, but I did see there was one commenter asking me if I finished Normal People. I haven't yet. Once I have finished it, I will respond to your comment.
I didn't see that. But actually, you know what? I didn't finish either.
Yeah.
There's a moment where it just hits the skids. We can get into this later, but mm-hmm. it didn't need, it might be too long.
I was going to say 10 seems like a lot for that story.
because there's a moment where it just starts to really feel redundant, and all my will to keep watching it just stopped.
No, I feel you. I wanted to get some stuff done this weekend, but I didn't. But I promise, I didn't respond. It's not that I haven't seen it or didn't want to respond. I want to respond with, I've seen Normal People. Let's talk about it. So we'll get
to Outer Banks.
It was no Outer Banks at all.
In terms of compelling you to finish.
I do want to finish Normal People. I just need to take the time. But yes, get in the conversation. We will hit you back. I promise you. Until next time, for Frasier, my name is Cal, advising you as always, wash your hands, bring some damn sanitizer. Before you leave the house, make sure you got that mask on you. I know we've all left and had to double back because we ain't have that shit. So put it wherever your keys are, wherever your wallet is. Do whatever you have to do. 6 feet behind the person in front of you, because that's what they say, so you don't catch this shit. But be smart. Don't be a dickhead out there. Tune in and watch less. Peace. Watch Less is hosted by Frasier Tharp and myself, Cal. Our producer is Taliba Newman. Associate producer and sound engineer is Jasmine Plata. Production manager, Chancel Correa. Talent booker, Anthony Allred. Junior booker, Austin Bailey. Our director of talent relations is Kristen Price Harrell. And our senior director of operations is Jen Stewart. Watch Less is a part of the Complex Podcast Network.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.